I heard he's a savior.
I heard he's a prophet.
He's immortal.
He's immune.
He's a god.
Far out. We've been waiting for you.
Is this a cult?
I help people open their minds.
Tick tock, little birdie.
I'm the magic man.
Calibrating synchronicity.
Beginning data transfer.
We want to kill David.
Why do you need a time traveler?
It's about saving lives. Starting with mine.
Sorry for the wait. Was it awful?
I'm a good person.
You end the world.
How do you surprise someone who can go back in time and warn himself?
Welcome, everybody, to Mike TV episode 4. We did it. We're on episode 4. With this episode, we are going to be recapping Legion seasons 1 and 2. And I am so thrilled today to be joined by my very special host, Dean. You know him as Rockdale Tiger on Twitter, but Dean, welcome. Thank you for joining me today.
Thank you, Lisa, for having me. Very excited. Hello, radios and anyone else who might be a Legionnaire as us. I'm very excited to pour into this last and final season.
Big Legionnaire. You've watched it from the beginning, right?
I did. I watched it from the beginning.
What drew you into the show initially?
Well, I've been a Marvel, comic fan since I was a kid. I'm not really a full comic book reader, but when I was a kid in the late 80s, early 90s, I got really big into comic cards. I didn't collect baseball cards. I collected Marvel cards and such. So that's where I learned most of my information about comics and Marvel and everything. So I really was drawn into it as a kid. Of course, in the 90s, the X-Men animated series and Spider-Man animated series on Fox, I've remember being wildly excited when the very first X-Men movie came out in theaters. I think I was in ninth or 10th grade, and just wasn't the best movie, but just the fact that it was on screen, and then I love the Marvel movies. I don't care how terrible some of them may be, or slow some of them may be, or off the cuff, but it's always, I will never not get that little kid excited rush when I see the hero pose of all the characters and stuff. So I was drawn to it for it being a comic. This is actually Legion. I have very little knowledge of that as a from the comic sense.
Same.
I think a little bit later. I think he had some earlier debuts, but I think his big comic run was in the early 2000s and stuff. So
X-Men New Mutants, if I'm not mistaken, right? New Mutants,
right.
50, maybe?
I couldn't tell you 100%, but like I said, it just looked different. And of course, the possible X-Men tie-in, even though knowing it wasn't like a full-on cinematic universe thing, it was still very interesting, the look of it. And then of course, Noah Hawley behind it. He's a fantastic up-and-coming television director. What he's created already, with Fargo and other things, just speaks for itself. So it looked like I went to it thinking it was just going to be an original take on a comic property, and that's what it is. If you're in any way a comic fan, you have to watch the show, because it's got to be the most on its own original and just true form. Like, this is exactly like whatever Noah Hawley sees in his head, he's somehow making it come out on that screen.
So you're a Fargo fan as well, right?
I watched the first season and I just never got back to it. Not because I didn't want to. I just didn't. I need to catch back up on it. I remember listening to Radio Labyrinth when they kind of covered the last two seasons when they first started, when they were, covered TV a little bit more. And I kind of wanted to keep up with it. But at that point, I think I was in the leftovers. That was in the same time. So.
Sure. Well, season 3 of Fargo stars the great Carrie Coon, also of the leftovers. What's interesting is there are these little tiny crossover occurrences in the stories of both season 3 of The Leftovers and season 3 of Fargo that were unintentional.
Really? So
it's you really have to see them. You really
do. Well, Leftovers is one of my jam. I just rewatched that a few weeks ago as the summer started.
My favorite show of all time. Dean, we're going to have to talk about The Leftovers. We're going to have to do another podcast about
that. Yeah, I was going to say, it'll take a lot longer than a couple minutes.
100% on board for that. So radios, let us know if you're interested in that. I can talk about The Leftovers for a long time. And then also, Rachel Keller, who plays Sid in Legion, is also in season 2 of Fargo, as is Gene Smart. So lots of crossover there. I love Fargo and also was drawn to Legion because of Noah Hawley, because of the Marvel property. I did a little reading up on it. I didn't know all of these things about it until I was learning about the show. I was super excited for Dan Stevens, whom I loved on Downton Abbey.
Oh, I, of course, loved him as the Beast, so you know. So.
Well, of course. But and then so many other great names in this show, including Aubrey Plaza and Jermaine Clement.
How about Bill Irwin?
Bill Irwin, fantastic.
Less known name, man, is Tony Award winner. Yeah. He's a great actor. He's went to Clown College. I think he's in the Clown College Hall of Fame. I think I read that.
Yeah, I think I heard that too. Okay, so we are big Legion fans, and we're going to right now, or before we dive into it, but just pure warning, we will spoil everything leading up to season 3 from the best of our recollection. We've both done rewatches recently, so I'm excited to dive into it. Very quickly, though, before we get into it, what else have you been watching lately, Dean?
I'm a teacher, so I have the summers off, and we spoke earlier. I told you my family's been out of town for about a week, which means, you know, a family man by himself for a week means he basically sits on the couch and watches whatever he doesn't usually watch. So
watch out.
I've actually spent most of the time rewatching things. I told you I rewatched The Leftovers. This week I've been rewatching Deadwood because I want to watch the movie, but I want to make sure I get back into it. So I love Deadwood. I watched all of What We Do in the Shadows on FX, which, you know, Jermaine Clement directs a lot of those and writes those. And
I still have not seen the finale of that one. I'm saving it to watch with my husband. I finally got into the show. We both loved the movie. I loved the show immediately. FX, shame on FX for showing such terrible trailers for that show. Because that show really looked horrible by the trailers, but it's so good. And so last one we watched was the orgy episode. So the finale's still on the DVR. I'm so excited for it.
I can't walk into a Party City or somewhere without seeing creepy paper. let's see. What else have I been? Tim always mentioned this on Radio Labyrinth, and I remember I watched the first couple of seasons, but it's taken so long I never caught back up. I've been going through all the seasons of The Venture Brothers. Fantastic adult animation.
Mm-hmm. Are you a Rick and Morty fan?
I've always heard great things about it. I've never watched it. I don't watch very much live television anymore.
Right.
Other than maybe sports and news. So it's just something that once it came on, I was never really there for it. And I've never seeked it out. I have Hulu, so I know all of it's on there. I've always heard great things, but no, I've never watched it. I've heard it's fantastic though.
Check it out. It is the best.
All
right. What about you? I put it up there. South Park and Rick and Morty, I would say, are my two favorite animated shows.
Yeah. I'm an old school. Like I said, South Park's another one of those where I always hear great things about the new seasons, but it's kind of like The Simpsons to me. I think several years ago, I kind of was like, I don't know what else it's going to do. So I dropped off, but I hear every year they crush it. They crush it every year.
Yeah. Yeah. South Park is still just the greatest. Okay. So Sean and I have started Good Omens on Amazon, but we have not yet finished it. Have you taken a look at that one?
I actually plan on watching that here in the next day or so. It's on my list for this week. I haven't started it, but I definitely have been looking forward to it.
Me too.
I enjoyed American Gods, so hopefully if it has, you know, the feeling, but it looks a little bit more humorous, which should be good.
Love American Gods. Big fan of American Gods as well. So actually, I was a little behind in finishing American Gods. I just finished it about a week and a half ago. And then I binged all of Dead to Me. Have you seen that on Netflix?
Is that Christina Applegate?
Yes.
Yes. Yeah, my wife and I watched all that. That great. Those
yeah.
Hilarious, dramatic. I mean, you talk about one of those. It reminds me a lot of Barry in the sense
yes.
of you laughing hysterically 1 minute and then go to complete, you know, holding your breath the next minute.
Exactly. Oh, Barry is one of the best. And I did finish the last season of Veep. Did you watch Veep?
I have watched a couple episodes of Veep, but haven't been a viewer.
I'm not a huge fan. Okay, before I go too far off on a tangent, the other shows I'm super into right now, of course, Handmaid's Tale. You watch Handmaid's Tale?
My wife's been out of town, so I'm mm-hmm. saving the next few episodes for when she gets back. But yes, we are at least caught up to season three. So I'm curious to see, what happens to that baby, man? What happened to that baby?
Oh, yeah. Well, season four or season three has started. So
right.
The first four episodes as we record this have aired.
So I know they released the first three the other week. What's the schedule yes. for the next ones?
Now just one per week.
One per week. Okay.
And I want to say it's 13 episodes. They
oh,
have,
wow.
Maybe I'm mistaken on that, but it's a lot of episodes.
I really like Handmaid's Tale. I was surprised how much I did. I still always have that worry that it's going to yeah. go to SJW in the future, but it somehow continues to ride the line without crossing over there.
The acting and the music
yes,
are so good.
Great stuff.
And then lastly, Big Little Lies. You and your wife watch Big Little Lies?
That would be a wife show. I have not seen any Big Little Lies. She's all about it though. So
oh boy, Meryl Streep. Oh, and I did Baskets is back, so I watched that first episode of Baskets. Pretty good. And then as a recommendation, I started watching Fleabag because I'm a huge Killing Eve fan. So somebody said I would like Fleabag. But I'm having a hard time getting into it. Have you seen that show?
I'm a very big Killing Eve fan. I haven't heard of the Fleabag. What is that on?
It is on Amazon.
Okay.
And it's Phoebe Waller-Bridge stars in it, whereas she's a creator and writer of Killing Eve. She's actually
okay.
a star of Fleabag. It's a comedy, British comedy. Very British.
Yeah, and those can, yeah, exactly. That can kind of be one way or the other.
It's, I'm going to stay with it, but we'll see.
Radio Labyrinth is sponsored by Atlanta Pizza in Ural, 1565 Georgia 138 in beautiful Conyers, Georgia. Atlanta Pizza in Ural is a longtime local favorite, serving the best pizzas, Euros, Italian beef sandwiches, hot subs, spaghetti, lasagna, and Greek salads in a relaxed, casual setting. Since 1983, check them out on Twitter at ATL Pizza Euro. That's ATL Pizza GYRO.
Okay, so let's get into Legion. That's what we're here for.
Oh, yeah.
And I do want to just do a shout out. Thank you, Radio Labyrinth. And thank you, everybody who's been listening from Radio Labyrinth and for Radio Labyrinth for helping promote Mike TV. If you have suggestions for other shows you'd like us to cover, please let us know. I still have not set up an email, so I know I suck. That's probably what I need to do to get better response. But right now it's on Twitter at MikeTV1, or you can also follow me at Lisa Krause. All right. So back to Legion. What instantly drew me in on Legion, I've said this before 1,000 times, I'm a sucker for good acting. I'm a sucker for good writing. This show has it. When I try to explain this show to somebody, you did a really good job, Dean, explaining it as far as from a comic book perspective. If you're a comic book fan and you understand the mechanics of comic books, you'll love this show. You'll be drawn in by the colors, the visualization, easy for me to say. And all of that is so true. This show has it all. The music is phenomenal and the story is out there. It really is. It's some really good science fiction. You have to pay attention. It does jump around in time, especially in season two, was not told linearly. So I think that's where it started to lose some people. Because season two was not as, I guess, acclaimed as season one. Or, you know, I know even our friends over at Radio Labyrinth fell off of it, and that was disappointing. So what are your thoughts about that?
Like you said, as far as just a product, it's an FX show, so you know you're getting quality. You have a Noah Hawley, who is a, you know, staid commodity, so we know what he brings. And you have fantastic acting, fantastic writing. And that was the thing. Season two, yeah, it gets a little slow with the main plot. It takes 10 episodes to do something they probably, or 11 episodes to do something they probably could have done in four. But didn't we all just complain that Game of Thrones did the exact opposite of that? Like, wouldn't you rather have too much than too little? To me,
the seriously,
beauty is in the journey. For this is one of those shows where you have to just go along for the ride. It is a television visual acid trip. You know, I mean, what it does and how it flows and where it takes you and you think it's taking you versus where you're following. I mean, it's a crazy show.
Yep.
But I don't know of anything else on television that's like it.
Well, you know what I tell people when I say, if you like Twin Peaks, you'll like this show. I feel like there's so much Twin Peaks influence in this show.
Yeah, it's a Twin Peaks, Stanley Kubrick, if they had the visual, you know, computer effects of 2019.
Right. Very good. Very good. So let's talk about the characters of Legion. Of course, the star, Dan Stevens, my heart, plays David Haller. David Haller is Legion. He is a mutant. In season one, he does not know he's a mutant. He thinks he's crazy. He's schizophrenic. He's psychic. He is learning his powers in season one. The season one opens, he's in a mental institution, and he's meeting his friends in there. And then as the season unfolds, he breaks out of said mental institution and ends up at a place called Summerland.
Summerland.
Is that correct?
Yep.
Which is run by Melanie, who is played by Jean Smart, who's great. And she is hiding these mutant people away from would-be attackers who want to control those mutant powers. She's trying to work with these people to help them develop them. So at Summerland, I should back it up. So David thinks he has can see monsters, has monsters in his head. He is in this mental institution with his friend Lenny, who is, I said, this is a hard show to really deep dive into because it just sounds so out there. But we find out Lenny is a manifestation of a friend of his named Benny, who was somebody he did drugs with.
Even that may not be certain. That's true.
David is an unreliable narrator because so much of this show takes place in his head. And you have to accept that when you're watching this show, that you're going in and out of his mind.
I think that's one of the neatest things about this show is that we feel like the whole show is kind of viewed through David, which makes him that unreliable narrator. And that's season one does a great job about, is David crazy or is this all part of his power? Because, you know, Melanie, the whole first season when they find him, keeps trying to tell him, you're not crazy. It's just, you're a mutant. You have these powers. And,
right.
And that's kind of the struggle of David. He doesn't ever really know, am I sick or am I gifted? Or what we might kind of find out is a little bit of both. You know, that was one of the wildest things about this, the first season especially, and I guess, of course, throughout the whole thing, we still are never really sure what's actually real or what's in his or Farouk's or anyone else's head.
And it really, that really is prominent a lot in season two, I think. It's really hard to discern whose head you're in. You're going in and out of Farouk's head. You're going in and out of David's head. So, yes. So, we mentioned Farouk. So, by the end of season one, we are to understand that part of this monster that David has seen all of his life, this Shadow King monster that looks just like kind of like the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man from Ghostbusters, except way creepier.
Yeah.
That part of that is that he was actually implanted with the monster in, when he was a baby. He's actually had another uncorporalized being living inside of him who is desperately trying to get out and find his body. And that is the Shadow King, also now known as Amal Farouk.
Right. I think we find out in one of the last few episodes of season one, whichever one where they're kind of stuck in the house. And this kind of goes to the main plot too. David is from the comics, and what we've been seeing some hints throughout the show, he's supposedly the son of a very, very powerful mutant, which I'm sure we'll mention in a minute who that's probably going to be. And anyone listening to this, of course, probably already knows, but as a baby, he was attached to this almost spirit of this parasite, this mutant, which again starts to kind of manifest itself as schizophrenia, or at least what they're told, schizophrenia. But the Shadow King's been with him as a baby. He finally realizes through season one that this other person basically is attached to him. And so in season one, of course, yeah, it's all about discovering that and the Summerland group trying to help David get rid of this parasite, which of course leads to a completely different run of season two, where now it's once they're split, you know, now they're finally facing off against each other. Amal Farouk, the Shadow King, and David, which maybe the way the show puts it, you know, these two could possibly be the two most powerful mutants in the world, at least as far as the show's universe is concerned.
Right. Yes. And I think even as far as the bigger X-Men universe is concerned, that David Haller is considered one of the most powerful.
Right.
And so, yes, you mentioned his parentage. So David's raised with his adopted family, right, and his sister, Amy, who has a big pivotal role throughout these first two seasons. Someone whom he's very close with and who takes great care of him, even into adulthood. We find that David, because he struggles with hearing so many different voices in his head, and we see this kind of through a series of flashbacks, that he abuses drugs, he can't keep a job, he eventually tries suicide by hanging, and that is the point where his sister Amy takes him to a mental institution called Clockworks, which is super creepy, and that's where the show opens. And so Lenny is in Clockworks with him. She is played by Aubrey Plaza. She is just fantastic in this role. I think she kind of steals every scene she's in. What do you think of her?
I think she's the best character on the show.
Agree.
It shocks me that now, and I know a show like this, and it's not as serious, it's kind of tongue-in-cheek, but she shows how good of an actress she is in this. You know, you think of her from Parks and Rec and, mm-hmm, and other things where she's always just a sarcastic girl. What she does in this show is so, she's so many different people all the time. Like, I love that she's a junkie at one point. She's a, you know, season one, the episode where it's like black and white and she's running through Clockworks as the silent movie dancing, you know, murderess is fantastic.
Yes.
As the fake psychologist, just, she shows so many different faces in this show. I don't know how she's not getting any kind of credit for this, or how she's not showing she's ready for more than just the kind of comedic sidekick type of person. She is amazing.
And I feel that way about Dan Stevens too. After having rewatched even season two, I know it wasn't maybe the best written, but his acting is just incredible. How he's not recognized a little bit more is unbelievable. So yes, additionally in Clockworks, he also meets Sid. Pretty hilariously, actually. He falls for her immediately because she is drop-dead gorgeous, played by Rachel Keller. And when he reaches out to touch her for the first time, not knowing what will happen, that's when we, the viewer, see they have a Freaky Friday moment and switch bodies. And that episode is hilarious. I think that, what is that, episode 2 or 3, or maybe even earlier?
Yeah, it's pretty early in the first season.
It is a fantastic episode.
Yeah, Sid season 1 is so different from later Sid, because she even has, kind of like he does, she seems very, you know, doe-eyed and naive and so innocent. And she's a far cry from what she becomes later on, taking charge of herself. But at the time, she almost, you know, not immediately, but as soon as they start kind of getting with each other and she realizes that he likes her for her and doesn't care about the touching, she falls for him too. You know, that love is a bright burning ember at the beginning.
Yes, their love story is beautiful. And especially when they realize they can't touch and they are able to go inside of David's head. He is able, this powerful mutant who can now bring other people into his head and create a safe space for them where they can touch.
Yeah, sex room. You mean a sex room, not a safe space, but just a sex room.
Right. Yeah, their white room, or I think they call it, or something.
White room, yeah.
Probably doesn't stay white for long. So when they escape Clockworks, David, really, that's the first time we see David's force of power, as he is blasting people into walls as they're escaping. And one of those is actually Lenny. So we are led to believe that Lenny is actually dead upon their escape. However, the character continues to live on in his head. And also as a minion of Farouk, actually. And so that becomes more evident in season 2 when she is able to be manifested again. But we'll get to that. When they are at Summerlands after Clockworks, we meet Melanie, who is grieving for her 21 year deceased husband, Oliver, whom she has frozen in a cryo chamber until she finds a solution on how to bring him back. Is that correct about Melanie and Oliver?
Yes. I don't necessarily think he's not dead, right? He just went into like a astral plane coma or something like that. Like, I don't think he actually died. I think he left mentally and right. She was preserving him until he comes back. But I mean, he might as well be dead, but yes, he's cryogenically lives in the big ice cube in the sky.
Yes. And David is there's a great episode where David is able to visit him there as well. That's a very fun episode. Oliver, of course, played by Jermaine Clement, fabulously. Then my other two favorite characters, because it's just so cool, are Carrie and Carrie. That is a male Carrie and a female Carrie who share one body. They share the body of the male Carrie. He is a scientist, very smart man. He can create all kinds of gadgets. And then the female Carrie is a super strong fighting ninja who can just basically kick ass.
Yes, I think Oliver in the last episode of season 2 appropriately names them Glasses McLabcoat and Girl Who Kicks.
Yes, Glasses McLabcoat. Some of the zingers in this show are just fabulous. And then lastly, I guess second to lastly, we have Tonami. Tonami is played by Jermaine Harris, and his special power is he remembers everything. He can also read other people's memories. So he has this great, just psychic memory ability. What else about Tonami?
I mean, he's a fairly boring character, to be honest. They always want to make him seem cooler because they put a gun in his hand every now and then. But yeah. Other than, you know, like one scene in season 2 when he's shooting a bunch of people, he kind of is there. Tonami's he's the exposition for the show. You know, he's the guy that comes in and basically after about 1.5 to 2 episodes, every couple episodes, he comes in and speaks for about 3 minutes, so you know what's been going on. I feel like he kind of helps fill in the blanks for maybe people who aren't catching up on the show.
Yes, and some
tends
other
to do that a lot.
He does. That's true. Some other cool features about this show: they have really interesting opening title scenes, which are different for every episode.
Yep.
And they also do these short little interstitial narrations. Throughout season two are mostly done by John Hamm. I think there's a Neil Gaiman one in there as well.
Okay.
But they do them in season one as well, and I don't remember them all completely, but I remember just loving them. They just kind of go off on these little short little tales of the theme, really, of the episode.
Right. The season two arc with John Hamm, speaking about, you know,
delusion,
delusion, psychosis, mm-hmm. conspiracy, moral hazard, all these things. Yeah, it's a good little way also to kind of figure out, like you said, the themes. And it does give you hints of kind of what's going on with some of the craziness you're seeing. You know, season two with the eggs and the little black delusion monster and all this stuff. You're watching that, you don't know what in the world's going on. But those interstitials do kind of fill in the blanks when you go back and actually think about how they play into the episodes.
Right. Yeah, exactly. And especially on a rewatch, it's very impactful too. Lastly, there is Clark, who is played by Hamish Linklater. And what do you want to say about Clark?
I like Clark. He also kind of is like, autonomy, where sometimes he kind of is an exposition character, but then also sometimes I feel like sometimes he acts as kind of the audience, because he is always the interrogator, so he's always asking questions, and some of the questions are seemingly really simple, but they're some of the simple questions we're asking, you know, like where have you been, why are you doing this, what's going on? So he kind of fills in some of those blanks as well.
Well, Clark is set up to be kind of the bad guy in season one. He's trying to capture David. David is, there is one scene where he kind of is trapped in a pool, and David can use his telekinetic powers to kind of shoot out energy as one of his attack moves. And in doing so, he disfigured Clark. He injured Clark in a way that disfigured him and burned half of his face. Clark and his team do catch up to Summerland by the end of season one, but David is whisked off in an orb. And when we start season two, it's been a year later, and they are now in Division 3, an area, a government-controlled area that is trying to help get David back. And Clark is now working with our group of people, so he's on their side.
Right, Division 3, I made sure I wrote this down today. I watched the first episode of Season 2. There's Division 1, which is the Global Command and Communications.
Okay.
Division 2, the Science, Genetics, and Tech Research Facility. And then Division 3, he mentions, is the tip of the spear, which is kind of, they're basically there to find and prevent mutant threats. So they even show like this nice little montage of all the different groups, and it shows some of our characters from Summerland, how they've interacted. And we have investigations, which I think shows autonomy in it. Then research, which shows lab coat Carrie, and then tactical, which is girl who kicks Carrie, and then strategy, which is Melanie. So all four of them have their own little like division they're in charge of. And they mentioned that the division was created after the Lazarus affair, which they never really come back to, but it does seem like something, like if they ever wanted to bring something back up, there was some past incident which made these divisions possible. So it makes it sound like, obviously, in this world, to begin with at least, mutants are, you know, it's in that realm of comics where mutants are a threat, you know, and they're unknown, and we don't know what's going to happen with them. So we find them before they can do anything, and take care of them before we even know if they're a problem or not. And then we see in season two, once they join, I think even Melanie says, like, well, we convinced them that we're not a problem. We're just here too. So it does kind of they do kind of fold together fairly quickly. But it, like you said, it's a year after, but they are now part of Division III once Season 2 begins.
Right. And I should say, too, that the other, I guess, major arc of how Season 1 ended was Farouk was successfully extracted from David. Mm-hmm. And what he did was he brought Oliver back and then took over Oliver's body and took off in Oliver's body. So we see Oliver just going off at the end of Season 1. Melanie is distraught because she's just gotten him back.
Right.
And David, who's finally happy and thinking he is free of Farouk, is enjoying a quiet moment, and then an orb comes and encapsulates him and whisks him off. And that is how Season 1 ends.
Right.
And I can't remember the explanation they give for the orb. They get him back, but how do they explain where he's been?
Well, in Season 2, it starts off with I believe, Oliver and Lenny kind of together. And you realize that they're both part of Farouk, that he's gone off. Then it kind of just shows up, you know, they show some flashes of some things that are going to come in Season 2. And Tonami and I believe Clark or Tonami and Carrie, one of the two, they just kind of happen upon David inside of the dance club. And he's sitting there and he even seems kind of withdrawn out of it. He's by himself. You actually can see dust on the ground to where maybe he's vaporized some people. Or if not him, you know, somebody's vaporized some people. And they ask him, you know, where he's been or where's Oliver? And he just says, or where is everybody? They're trapped in the maze. And that's when we see our first little glimpse of the people with the chattering teeth all frozen. So they kind of just find them. In the first episode, they're really all asking, where have you been? They don't know where he's been. He just kind of shows back up because they've been looking for Oliver, thinking that he's the catalyst for these chattering teeth people.
That's right. Those dang chattering teeth people. Oh, I forgot about them.
The worst.
So heading up Division 3 is Admiral Fukuyama, yeah, who wears a basket over his head. So I always just call him Basket Head.
Yeah, I think you should.
And he has these androgynous robots who are called the Vermilion, who are basically women with mustaches.
Yes, they
all look the same. They have these terrible Dorothy Hamill bowl cuts, and they run around in these leotards and kind of just all talk in these different robotic voices and assess percentages of failure or success in everything they do.
Yeah, the strangest characters ever created. They're fantastic, though.
They are. They're fun. But
I didn't make sure I wrote down some things about, you know, this, you find this out later in Season 2, but Admiral Fukuyama, he was a mutant who, it sounds like, had kind of healing powers, I guess, you know, a la Wolverine or someone like that. And they chose him, or some government agency, you know, some Marvel redundant government agency chose him because of his healing power. They wanted to implant him basically with a computer. So he's going to be the secret keeper for the entire United States, something that they can't ever break into because he's part of it. And so they even say the Vermilion that when we were a child, we had a computer hardware put into software, you know, and so they implanted some computer in his head. It was terribly painful. They refer to it as lava coming out of the volcano or something like that. So now he's all knowing, apparently. You know, he can interact with any kind of technology. His mind is impenetrable.
Yes.
But he can see through any kind of technology. And so we see these flashes, you know, throughout the season of through his basket, how he sees all this stuff happening. And if you kind of wonder why it's anything that's electronic, he can apparently see through. So I assume that doesn't just mean camera, you know, if there's a light bulb on, I'm assuming he must be able to see through that. So he can see and talk through the Vermilion. So there's little android puppets and yeah, they're all deliciously creepy. Yeah.
Really good Vermilion impression there. I really like that one. You're giving Tim Andrews a run for his money.
Oh yeah, I'm getting there.
So yes, you're absolutely right about Fukuyama. He has a mind that can't be read and is a secret keeper. is what I wrote down about him. So I started taking notes. Really, I want to say my favorite episode, perhaps of the whole entire series so far, was episode 6 of season 2. So each of these episode titles, I pay attention to episode titles. And the thing about Legion, each of their episode titles are just a chapter.
Right. So
even after season, this gets confusing because season 1 ends, and then when season 2 starts, so season 1 ends with chapter 8, season 2 starts with episode 1, which is chapter 9. So we get to episode 6, and that is chapter 14. Episode 6 was, I don't really want to say a bottle episode, but kind of was. We see this glimpse of all these possible scenarios of possible Davids based on choices that he made along his life, or would be choices that he could have made. And it follows three particular arcs, although there's glimpses of other Davids in there too, including the David who tried to hang himself and was committed to Clockworks is in there too. But the three Davids that we primarily follow are the one who is just working as a coffee boy at an office park or at a big office building. And because he can read people's minds, he uses that to become the most powerful man in the world and the richest man in the world. So by the end of it, we see him as his former employer is now his employee. The other one is he just couldn't face life, so he started sniffing white out and talking to hallucinatory mice that he was seeing, and eventually just became a drug addict, and eventually a homeless man on the street, just, you know, talking to voices and people that aren't there that nobody else can see, that only he can see. And you mentioned Stanley Kubrick. There's actually a Clockwork Orange scene with him as the old homeless man being beat up by
the Droogs.
Yes, exactly. And then there's the third one, who's this heavily medicated, being taken care of by his sister, stacking boxes at a dairy factory, no life, doesn't want to be on the medicine. And we see a glimpse of what happens when he takes himself off the medicine and is harassed by some police officers. And in the end is shot and killed because he's fighting back and freaking out because he's seen the Shadow King everywhere. So that episode is just really cool. And Dan Stevens is walking in and out of these scenes where he's also, Dan Stevens is playing these other characters. It's just very seamless and well done and very artistic. So it's my favorite episode. So I did want to call it out. What about you? How did you like that episode?
I think that that episode might be a peek into season 3. Now that I've seen some things about what's coming, in that episode, which is a fantastic episode, I think that's one where a lot of people actually kind of noped out of the show, because you had, I think the episode right before this one was the one where it follows Sid throughout her childhood, you know, over and over again. So you kind of have these two very character-centric episodes, which just delay this search for Farouk's body. And I think that's where a lot of people are finally like, this is just taking too long. You know, they got out of it. But this episode is cool because when you watch it, one of his little side stories shows like a methed out David in a diner with his buddy. And he's describing this quantum theory of branches, and he's using the French fries and showing, you know, every time you make a choice, it's a different branch, but every other choice is also out there. It's different realities, blah, blah, blah. And so you kind of get this feeling, okay, well, that's what this episode is, just showing what could have happened to David.
Yes.
Right. And so you see the coffee boy who eventually becomes the richest man in the world, or really the most powerful man in the world. And even there's some glimpses there where that's actually, you know, I think that's, you see him looking in the mirror at the end of that one, and he turns into Farouk. So to me, that's showing if Farouk would have just gotten his way with David, that's Farouk basically taking complete control of David, or getting wanted out of that. You know, the power he has, the women smoking and walking around his giant mansion and the pool and everything. You know, that is Farouk's lifestyle. So that seems like you kind of, without being a murderous world ender, kind of is the king of the world in that sense. And then you have the complete schizophrenic David, where he becomes a homeless man and he's about to blow up the planet until a girl who kicks Carrie, you know, slices him in half with her samurai sword. Division 3 gets him. And then I did have a question, the drugged out David, you know, so he gets shot, right? You didn't mention there is an ending they kind of show of his life where he's being still taken care of. Hi, Amy, he's the old man. He can barely,
right.
Can't walk anymore. He barely can talk. He can eat pea soup, you know. I wondered, because they do show her visiting a grave, but I wondered, when he gets shot, is that the reality of him eventually being old? And is the grave, because right before they show this, a couple scenes before they show the grave, it shows the scene from season 1 where he hangs himself, but they really hold on the cord when he hangs himself. And remember in season 1, he hangs himself and they talk about how the cord burnt through, like how there was no explanation of why the cord would have burnt through, which you have to kind of assume that was maybe Farouk burning it with his powers or something.
Right.
But I wonder if that scene where she's visiting the graveyard is actually, had he actually committed suicide? You know, and so even that's a branch where his suicide works.
Oh, I love that. I had not thought of that.
Right. And so I kind of thought when he got shot in the back, because it makes a, you know, you get shot right in the middle, the midsection, the bullet goes through. Usually that's not necessarily fatal. And so I kind of wondered if maybe when he gets shot, if that actually ends up being, because she was his caretaker as he's the drugged up guy anyway.
Right, and right.
So that kind of progresses that. But I love, so here's what I think. I think what we're going to find out in season 3, through some of the previews, and I know we'll get a little bit more to our theories about that, but one of the main new characters for season 3 is Switch. And she's a mutant who has the power of time travel, right? And so that, and if you've watched any of the previews for season 3, they've mentioned this constantly. It's going to be about time travel. Well, not only this episode, but a lot of episodes, but especially this one, I'm wondering if we'll find out if all of these are just different time threads as opposed to alternate dimensions, you know, or alternate, you know, maybe he's creating time threads as he's going back through this next season. I'm also very curious if we're going to find some things in some of these old seasons where when they seem so crazy, you know, in the past, maybe now we're going to find out some of these things are actually past David coming back, or even, you know, remnants of him. I was noticing when I was rewatching here in the past couple of days, there's flashes of scenes where David's hair is completely different than what it usually is. And so right. I wonder if that might play into this, you know, it is still this question of what's real, what's fake, but now it's not only what's real, what's fake, but now is it time? Is it present? Is it past? Is it future? You know, it's going to get crazy. It's only getting crazier from here.
So I do have something to say about that. I'm glad you brought that whole time up, because I did rewatch it from that point, from that episode we just talked about, and then watched them all. And I want to say right before that one bottle episode, essentially what this whole season is about is the quest of Farouk trying to actually find his body. He needs his actual body back, which was buried by these monks in secret. We find out the chattering teeth was actually from, a cover up by the monk who was trying to keep it a secret.
The Mego monks. They kept Farouk's body once he was killed, and he has, yeah, they don't really fully explain the chattering. He has some power or disease or something that puts them in, quote, the maze, basically a internal mental, you know, comatose state.
Right. And so what Farouk does in his quest to find a body, and I guess just continue to torment David, is he actually kills David's sister, Amy, with this tool that he has. And in killing Amy, he is able to give Lenny a body again. So he basically brings Lenny back in Amy's body. Now, she still looks like Lenny, but she now has blue eyes like Amy and some of Amy's memories, correct?
Correct.
And then she's haunted by Amy for the rest of the show in a really sad and also hilarious kind of way.
Yeah, it seemed it was a very, that was one of my favorite episodes as far as the tension where Lenny comes back and they're trying to figure out whose body she's in. And you yes. watch the episode because of the interstitials with Farouk and Oliver are kind of being played as they're figuring out this mystery. And yeah, they steal some machine from Division 3. Somehow it swaps bodies with Amy. You get that really weird scene where they're selling donuts to the mining crew underground for some reason. And it's always strange with Legion, but that's nothing new. But yeah, it was kind of his way of, I think, giving a big F you to David after he promised he wouldn't kill anybody anymore.
Right.
So he kind of, I don't know if he necessarily killed, cause we do see Amy, like you said, she's talking with Lenny. So I don't know, is she dead? Or are they both the same person now? Is it a David Shadow King situation where she's mentally part of her, or are these just memories, or, so we're not really sure, I think, what's going on with that.
Well, in the La Desolée, she does kind of help to guide Lenny in her decision making. We'll get to La Desolée because I think that's where it really gets crazy. As if it's not crazy so far already. The other thing I was going to say about this was that.
Hey guys, here's another one of Radio Labyrinth's awesome sponsors, Bailey Tree Care LLC in Gainesville, Georgia. You can contact Nick Bailey at 770-530-9421 or Jason Chapel at 404-234-2599. Bailey Tree Care. They are Northeast Georgia's premier choice for high-quality tree care services at affordable prices. Their tree care experts bring an excellent safety record and over 10 years of experience in the industry. Bailey Tree Care specializes in residential products and offers free estimates for all your tree service needs. Residential tree care, certified arborists and tree climber, tree trimming and pruning, tree removal, stump grinding and removal, shrub trimming, pruning, underbrush clearing, and mulch and firewood sale. Safety, professionalism, and affordability. Call them today to discuss your tree care need. That's Bailey Tree Care LLC.
So the other thing that they're doing, I also think this is where viewers fell off. Because this is a week-to-week show and people can't remember anything anymore, we're so oversaturated, right? We can't remember anything. And so there was that episode aired with the crazy Amy dying and Lenny being brought back to life and this body switch thing. And then and then a week later, it was the bottle episode with the three Davids. It didn't even go into what was happening with Lenny. And so I think that's where this show... If you fell off this show, dear listener, give it another shot watching them as a binge. I say this about The Walking Dead, too. It's a better watch if you can watch them one after the other and not have to try to remember thing from one episode that doesn't pick back up until four episodes later. The show rewards you for remembering things, but I think underestimates that most people can't remember little details like that. And that's what Walking Dead was doing too, or at least Scott Gimple was doing. Walking Dead's not doing it any longer, but that's what happened through that whole Negan arc. I digress. I don't know if you watch Walking Dead, but I'm going to defend it because they planted these little seeds and expected people to remember things, that didn't pick back up for four or five episodes.
I agree. When I watched all these live the past 2 years. When I rewatched them both this spring, Legion.
Yes.
When I rewatched both the seasons this spring, it did, especially season two, which was drawn out more than it needed to be. But you realize that, yes, there are, I think most people would have enjoyed if they would have taken a couple episodes out of the middle and thrown them at the end or at the beginning or something. Because, yeah, instead of having an early arc, a late arc, it's a whole arc, but they do throw these bottled up episodes in the middle of it. Like you said, it's the Lenny Amy episode, the David episode, and before the Lenny episode, it was the Sid episode. So you right. almost have three 100% character development shows in the middle of, oh, are we still trying to find his body?
Right.
And so, yeah, a lot of people, I think, zipped out of this one because the idea of if they're going to get to his body took a long time, but it pays off.
It does pay off.
You see, even the last three episodes where his plan gets set into place, it takes three or four episodes of him starting to set his plan. But if you watch all those in a row and realize when he sets his plan, everything that falls into place, it pays off. So I think season three will probably try to be a little bit better about that because they got the criticism from season two. And because I know it's the last season, so they don't need to keep it going.
But it's Noah Hawley, though. He doesn't care. He's going to do what he wants.
But that's the thing. He wants this to be the last season. So
yeah.
I think, you know, if you loved season one and then zipped out on season two, there's only one season left. It's already online. There's no reason for someone to not catch back up and watch this next season.
I agree. It's only eight.
Yeah. So they did. Jeff and Tim especially. Get back in.
Come on, Jeff. Yeah. So season one is eight episodes. Season two is 11. They did stretch it out a little bit. And then season three will be eight episodes again. And then I was going to say also, you mentioned about those really character-centric and character development episodes. By episode nine, David isn't even in that episode. They do a complete episode without David in it at all. That's the one where we go back 13 days earlier and see all what Melanie's been up to and how Melanie's been controlled by Farouk, or slowly being controlled by Farouk as she continues to inhale drugs out of that ornate elephant.
the elephant bong, the yes. blue stuff, whatever that is.
To some great music every time. Oh, yeah. You know, they've got the Flaming Lips. They throw some Jane's Addiction in there. Is that some Radiohead? I think they even play.
Oh, yeah, they get everything.
Gross. They've got some great music going on all through there. So let's, as we kind of wrap up summarizing the season, and I want to throw back to you because I think your notes are better than mine, but let's talk about where all of the characters kind of end up, starting with Ptolemy, who unfortunately, so John Hamm introduces in his little interstitial narrations the idea of delusion and how delusion can manifest itself and evolve into this mass panic. And it's demonstrated in many ways. It's demonstrated through a reenactment of the Salem witch trials and things like that. The way it's demonstrated on the show is through a little black gooey monster who's hatched out of an egg. And we see the first one hatch and crawl into Ptolemy's ear, meaning that he is now infected with what I call the delusion monster. So he goes around and starts planting these eggs in some of our other characters' bedrooms and is whispering delusions in their ear. And so it's symbolic of how this delusion is spread. They are first all delusional over Fukuyama, right? First, they're all afraid that Fukuyama's not who he says he is or not leading them correctly. And so they start to turn against him in their delusions. But in that pseudo or that almost rebellion against Fukuyama, David comes in and is able to pluck the delusion monster out of Sid's head and out of Carrie's head. But it's too late for Ptolemy. The monster is too large. And as it explodes out of him, Ptolemy is kind of split into two or torn in half, left for dead. The Vermilion come and say they can save his mind in the mind frame. So where we leave off with Ptolemy, your favorite character, is that he is essentially dead, but his mind is left alive in the mind, in the what they call the mind frame, this computer circuit. But because he's in this mind frame, he now can see happenings, and he actually at one point tries to communicate with David through a Vermillion to let him know where Farouk's body is, because we're still all trying to solve this mystery of where the body is. Tanami finds that Monk is actually in the mainframe with him, and so he learns that Farouk's body is in a place called Le Désolée, which I guess is a huge desert, and seems to be on an astral plane or in another dimension or something.
Yeah,
at the center of it is a large pink drain stopper with a huge drain hole.
Yeah, Désolée is definitely, if you're constantly wondering what's real and what's not real, Désolée doesn't care what you think. It is, I think, if anything, it's the, it almost seems like it's the mesh point of reality, you know, because the our characters are actually showing up there. And so it's not like, earlier in that season, there's the field where David first meets Farouk, and there's like a little fortune telling stand. Right. And that obviously is only something they're in. So that seems like it's part of the mental plane. Even Farouk unzips it at one point, which I think is awesome.
Like,
he unzips the scene, and it's like a white room. And so there's some things that are obviously the mental plane. Désolée is what they call it, the desert that used to be a valley. So it is some kind of hidden space in reality, but people are able to get there. But at the same time, it is definitely molded by what Farouk and David want to see, or at least Farouk for sure, because you have the big pink bathtub stopper, you got all the crazy ninjas with safes on their head, you got the maze, you got the minotaur, you got all this craziness going on. So
right,
who knows?
And that is really where the season has its climax, comes to its conclusion. There is a bit of a aftermath, and that's where I want to get back into the time jump thing. But so let's just talk about what happens at Le Désolée, the big climax. This is where everybody is trying to converge. Sid gets there first. So Farouk and Oliver are there on the hunt for Farouk's body. David is essentially about a day behind on his quest to track them. Sid shows up and she joins in. But they end up finding a tent where they take shelter and find dead versions of themselves, which they don't really know what to make of that. Oh, we didn't even talk about future Sid. So David is David learns how to go into this chamber and go into the future. And in the future, he is met with future Sid, who has one arm, and warns him that he absolutely, David, must not kill Farouk, because in doing so, he'll end up destroying the world. And so he actually needs to help Farouk find his body. And so for whatever reason, David doesn't quite relay all of that information properly to Sid. This is what starts the kind of breakdown of their relationship. And also future Sid and David are able to touch and kiss, which also makes current Sid jealous, but not jealous, because she understands that that's her in the future. So this kind of just starts this little bit of web of lies and distrust between Sid and David. Well, David doesn't have distrust, but Sid is starting to could be the little delusion monster that was planted in her. And of course, certainly Farouk works through Melanie on her as well. But Sid is starting to see another side of David and another have a different opinion on who the monster is in all of this.
Yeah, and even before that, we see Farouk figure out that David's going into the future. He goes into the future with his awesome, there's the awesome scene. Oh, I know a lot of people, even this is one of those scenes where people are like, what the hell? You know, but this, he's got that car. It's got the little crazy engine in the back, which he hooks up to the goop in the front. He sits in the back and it he somehow transports himself and hacks into the future. And he shows up and has the big scene with Sid. And this, like you said, we should have mentioned this. This is probably one of the most pivotal scenes as far as where everything goes. He finds out from Sid that in the future, it's not him who wins the world, but it is David who wins the world, right? Nice. And so we find out that he even says, oh, I've thought my entire life I've been the villain. The men with blue eyes and white skin come and try to stop me. But you're trying to tell me that it's all the opposite of that? Like, it's the exact difference of that? Like, so he's possibly the hero now trying to stop David, and David is the one that's going to end the world. And so we find out finally what's really future Sid's plan is not to help Farouk, but to actually stop David. And this, of course, is what Melanie, who I think is actually Farouk at the end, is starts showing Sid to convince her that David is the monster, not Farouk. David himself is the one who's the bad guy.
Right. And so we start to see, as the characters end up in Le Désolée, so I think maybe Lenny arrives next, and then Carrie and Carrie shortly behind, because they planted a tracker. Carrie so wisely planted a tracker on the weapon that they planted for Sid, or for Lenny. And I should say too that David, even this was part of David's design, because before he even left for Le Désolée, we see that scene where he goes and taps Carrie and Clark on the head and basically plants a memory in them that they will come to find out a little bit later on things they need to do to be able to go and help help David, including the dampener.
Right. We see, well, we remember even before that, we see, I think in episode 7 or 8, it shows him in his own mind. He's got this battlefield, like desks, you know, like table, yeah, with the world set up almost like you think of the Game of Thrones map room. Mm-hmm. But it's, you know, he's got one of those tables set up with like the desert, and he throws all the pieces onto the table and he starts setting them all up. So yeah, this is all his big master plan for the last 3 or 4 episodes to come into place.
And then in the penultimate episode, at the start of episode 10, we actually see a glimpse of evil David. He's in a cave. He has the high hair, just like the comics. And there's dead bodies all around him. And he's just kind of sitting on a throne. I don't want to say that word, but he's sitting on a chair looking like a throne, and he's holding a sphere, and the sphere has Sid's face in it.
Yeah.
That's a very ominous scene that is never really revisited. I feel strongly that will also come back in season 3.
You also have Lenny on the floor in front of him and holding her stomach as if maybe she might be
pregnant,
you know, with a yes, crazy baby or something. But yes, this is definitely the biggest glimpse into the comic version of Legion we've seen so far. So definite possible future.
And before Lenny goes to Le Désolée, she actually escapes Division 3. David frees her, or Farouk, I can't remember whom. But she she escapes, and she goes back to her old stomping grounds, her old drug house, where, you know, she was respected and lauded as the, I guess, the head ho of all the druggies. And so she goes back there to meet with new Janine, get it on with new Janine. And it's there that she is first, we see her haunted by Amy, and Amy tells her she's got to go help David.
Yeah. And even there, when she wakes up before she leaves, the girl, new Janine, she says, like, she wakes up and she's in that, she goes, oh, we're having a prince, and holding, yes, her stomach as if Lenny impregnated her somehow.
Right. You know? That's what I was going to say, because when you said pregnant Lenny, that's what it made me think of. Yeah, because they call her the queen. So right. Presumably a man impregnated her, but I guess you never know nowadays. anyway, so the other thing that at this point we do hear repeated out of David is, I believe he says the words, and I know he says it at the end too, how he's not I'm a good person, I deserve love. This is where David is starting to kind of reuse that mantra as he's confronted, right?
Yes, that was going to be my sign-off today. I think I was going to use that. No, I'm just kidding. But yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I'm a good person. I deserve love. I deserve love because I'm a good person. Just muttering that at the end. And that even seems to be his other personalities telling that that was his delusion. Love was his delusion. You know, Sydney was his delusion of thinking that he could have a normal life. In fact, you remember the episode, I think 6, you said, where it shows all the different Davids. When the tweaked out David is talking about the different branches, one of his branches, he says, I could even be married with 2.5 kids. And it cuts to that one scene. I think it's only one cut, maybe two, but only one cut of showing him with a wife and kids, and he's happy.
Yeah.
You can tell it's filmed completely different than the rest of the episode. It's all slow-mo, it's brightly lit, and it's just, it's what he really wishes he could have. You know, like I think we're going to start finding that out, which is, that is his weakness, is he's never really felt loved. And that's why now he's so angry, because the one person who he thought would be the person who loves him, you know, he demands at the end, you tell me that you're going to kill me if I don't cooperate. You tell me that this is the bad things. He can't believe that even his love, quote unquote, has betrayed him.
Yeah. It's heartbreaking, really, the way this season ends. So finally, we see as the final episode, David and Farouk are confronting each other. David has been looking for Sydney, I should say, in his quest to find Sydney. So they keep all going down the drain, that drain hole. Sydney goes down the drain, and Carrie and Carrie go down there. Once they're down there, they're chased by a Minotaur. But also, Sid is shown all these delusions, really. Her delusions continue to be fed by Melanie, who's down there. And agree, is completely Farouk by that point. Definitely serving the Minotaur. We see that too. But, and then, Clark shows up with the dampener, and the dampener is the huge, just like the drain stop. And it is meant to, once sounded, stop Farouk's powers temporarily, long enough for David to kill him, right? All of his powers.
Right. Now,
Farouk finds the dampener, sees Clark planting the dampener, and picks it up and just throws it across the field.
Yeah, I gotta back up for just a second.
Yeah.
So there's like 25 minutes devoted to Melanie and Sid during this, which I think is, if I was going to cancel out of the season, I think it was this point. And even rewatching it every time, it infuriates me, because Sid gets completely duped by the Shadow King here. Like, it's so obvious that she is not Melanie, and she's just showing you everything to piss you off and make you turn against David. Like,
she even says it. She says, you're not Melanie.
But then she keeps trying to say, well, no, I'm not Farouk, because he's right there. He's being tortured, right? Like, and she just gets duped. I mean, completely duped. Like, Sydney frustrates me, because sometimes she seems like strong, and then other times she seems so weak, or at least easily manipulated, which obviously she gets manipulated by David mentally. But I mean, the Shadow King just bends her. I mean, completely bends her to his will. He makes this transition happen. He makes this transition happen. There is complete, this one scene combined with the scene where Farouk goes to meet Future Sid. All right. So if you remember when he meets Future Sid, he gives this whole monologue about, do you play craps? He says, roll the bones, you know, throw dice. And he talks about how rigging the game, and she calls him a cheat. And he says, well, cheat is a legal term. And, you know, if the state designs a system where you die and you don't have anyone to give your possessions to, the state takes your possessions. Well, who do you think makes the law? The state. He says the game is rigged. And then he goes, I am the state. he basically tells her right there that I got a backup plan. Don't think that any of this is beyond. I think the Shadow King is so far in control of this situation. I think he is playing this game and he is winning. He is completely winning this game. He wants David to be evil. He knows that's what it's going to cause him to live. And he knows if David's evil, he can probably manipulate him to be part of his, you know, to join with him. He's duping all of them. I think the Shadow King is the, they're making David the bad guy in the third season, but the Shadow King is still the bad guy. He is the main bad of this story.
So what's going to happen? We'll talk about predictions at the end, but you're right. Something's going to have to happen to reverse all of this to make David the good guy again, because the show can't possibly end with just him being the bad guy the end.
Right.
But okay, so let's talk about the last episode. Okay. All right. So it opens up, and even in a rewatch, I'm still not sure what I thought of this opening scene. It was very artistic. So it's David and Farouk essentially floating toward one another, singing "No One Knows What It's Like to Be a Bad Man." I don't know the name of the song.
Behind Blue Eyes.
Yes, Behind Blue Eyes. And so it's very dramatic, and then their avatars are essentially coming out of them and fighting each other. And so you know, I'm a Dragon Ball fan. I get it. I understand.
I love this because one of the main things I have really enjoyed, especially the second season, you know, so in the very first season, him and the Shadow King obviously don't face off very much mentally like that. But there's that season where he realizes he's trapped in his mind. He's drawing up on the chalkboard, like the history of the Shadow King. And then it even shows like kind of a representation of Xavier fighting the Shadow King with his mind. And he says that my dad fought the Shadow King with his mind. And even there, they show two figures in like almost like thought bubbles of like their brains fighting each other. Like, so it's not really them. It's like monster versions of them.
Yes.
So I love that. The second season, it starts off with episode one, which the dance battle. The dance battle in the club between the two of the three of them.
Oh, yeah.
And that's awesome. There's the scene where he first meets Farouk and they're wrestling.
Yes.
And they're turning into different things. And even that, like, Farouk's laughing the whole time because it's like, to him, they're just playing mentally. Like, I'm completely forgetting Legion's first name for some reason at this point.
David?
I wanted to say Dan because of
Dan.
But David and Farouk are fighting, they're wrestling, and Farouk's just laughing because it's like, you know, oh, you're strong, but you're nowhere near what you could be. And now it's like, I love this idea of how they don't physically fight. It's a mental fight between them. And they have this completely animated mental fight, which is so cool. There's a scene earlier in the season where it actually shows Farouk dying. And whatever season they talk about the Mego monks, I think, but it shows Farouk and he's sitting like, it looks like he's at a dinner table and he's got a couple women next to him, but he's just sitting there almost frozen. And in his glasses, you see these like explosions and things happening.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Through my third rewatch, I finally realized what happened. This was when he is fighting Xavier on the astral plane. So he's just sitting somewhere randomly, and he's mentally fighting Xavier, and Xavier defeats him, and then he just all of a sudden he just drops into his plate of food. Like, his body dies because Xavier defeated him. So I love this. I love the way that Legion has shown this like the way that they illustrate these mental fights. It's such a cool, and it's different every time. The dance battle, the collegiate wrestling concept, now the animated where they're turning into different things, and he's the spider, you know, wrapping him up in the webs. It's, to me, that's a really cool way to show battles without it being, you know, mutants throwing crap around or shooting lasers out of their eyes or something like that. This is a pure psychic mental battle. Like, it's all in the mind, but we can watch them do it. I think it was cool.
Very anime style. I mentioned Dragon Ball. I should say it was more like Bleach, or if you're a fan of any kind of anime, to me, that's what it resonated It's really hard to take that concept and just put it right into the show. I mean, they did it, and maybe it was just them floating toward each other singing that song that was just right. a little cheesy for me. And I hate using that word because I don't think there's anything about this show that's cheesy. I love every minute of it. So, but what we do see as that fight is ensuing is Lenny shoots the dampener. And so that creates this opportunity for them to for him to actually defeat Farouk, but it cuts away from that and goes to this scene that is 3 years later, and we see Melanie and Oliver basically living in an ice cube talking about how the betrayal happened. This is where we get that great line about glasses McLabcoat.
McLabcoat girl yeah. kicks.
Because they're talking, because what we knew this already about Oliver from season one when he was in the cryo chamber, that he was forgetting words and losing his memory about right. stuff. So we're already seeing this with Melanie and Oliver clearly in another cryo chamber of sorts. They talk about they've stashed their bodies somewhere. They're not really sure where. The world basically ended. Well, it didn't really end. I mean, the sun still rises and right. still sets, but you know, but they do miss their friends though. And they start of, and then they sort of start, they go back to that moment where Lenny shoots the dampener and David is about to kill Farouk, smash his head with a rock. They go back to that moment. And before that, before the episode ends, it never goes back to the 3 years later. We never really see David destroy the world. We see some repercussions of the fallout of what happens next, which we're about to go into. But I still think that we're going to be going up to that 3 years later moment of where we find Melanie and Oliver at this point.
Yeah, I mean,
do you agree with that?
I do, and I also don't think we don't really know. That scene, I think, is kind of designed to be another one of those, you know, misdirection scenes, because it almost it infers that, oh, they've been here for 3 years, but we don't know how long they've even been over. You know, they may have been around for two more years or more and then finally just decided to go there, because even when he says, oh, yeah, we've been here for, he says, what we've been here for 1 hour. Is that the word? What's the right. word? A soup.
You know, yeah.
So we don't know how long they've been there.
That's true.
We don't know really anything. That is another one of these completely unreliable narrators. You know, another, which is what's so great about the show, is you can't trust anything on it.
So, great, but also like, impossible right, yeah. to predict. Impossible to predict. Yeah. We'll get into our predictions, but the final scene essentially is David. Well, final two scenes, I guess, is still in Le Desolée. Sid stops David from killing Farouk. She confronts him, says that perhaps he's been the real monster all along. And as let's see, Carrie and Clark swoop in, and Carrie's created this crown gadget that he can put on Farouk's head, which basically renders him powerless. So they do that, and as that's happening, as there's chaos happening on the field, David goes over and taps Sid and causes her to lose her memory of distrust of him. So they return to level three. And Sid is standoffish, but not really completely sure understanding why. David is in the delusion room talking to himself, saying, you know, he's a good person. He deserves love. He's kind of fighting with other personas of himself that are manifested looking like himself. Although they're, if you watch it with, subtitles, they're given different names, different versions of the name David. Like one is Divid and one is DVD. It's interesting. But he is saying that he's the Omega. This is where he actually calls himself. I know what I am. I'm the mutant. I'm the Omega. then, I guess I should have said that Sid starts to, before the desolate, the room, the, I'm getting lost in my notes here. Before that happens, Sid tries to shoot David, and Lenny shoots at the same time. And that was a very cool scene where Lenny's bullet stops Sid's bullet, at the cross, at the intersection of the bullets. And then that's where Carrie swoops in and captures Farouk. So what we see as the final scene is David is brought into a courtroom thinking that he's about to testify against Farouk, but instead he himself is actually on trial. The night before, he had also gone into Sydney's room and had sex with her while she was still under the mind wipe. So essentially she confronts him that next day saying, "You drugged me and had sex with me," which was pretty powerful statement I thought she made there to him. And his face, Dan Stevens' face, while he's surrounded in an orb that is essentially, weakening his powers enough to where he's stuck there for the time being. They are all accusing him of treachery and things that he's done wrong. And for some reason, Farouk is there. Why would Farouk be free? So this is my question for you. Why is Farouk free? Now, I knew they had Farouk captured, and Farouk whispered to a mouse, and the mouse went and whispered the truth to Sid. And that is how Sid, came out from under this spell or this memory loss. But why would they just free Farouk while they have David on trial? That part did not make sense to me.
The only thing I can think is that they realized that he was telling the truth enough to know that David is the real bad guy, like all the crimes, like basically almost like they're pinning all the crimes from Farouk through David just straight on to David. And he even mentions, and this is kind of where all those John Hamm interstitials come into play, he even says, no, this is some kind of mass psychosis.
Yeah.
You know, and it is, like, and again, this is where I said earlier, I think Farouk is winning. Like, this is part of his plan. He realized that as soon as I know that there is a potential possibility that David is the bad guy, I'm turning his ass into the bad guy. Like, he's just playing him. He's playing all of them. He is the Shadow King. Like, he is showing exactly what his true ability is, aside from his mutant powers. He is a manipulator. He's a mind, you know, a mental confusionist. He's coming in and he's wrapping all of them around his thumb. That's the only thing I can see, is that episode shows me how much, as much as David thought he had his plan set, Farouk was still one step ahead of him. You mentioned how David finally kind of comes into the element of, I'm the Omega, I'm the mutant. And he even says to Lenny when they put her in the paddy wagon to take her back to Division 3, she says how she's going to be trapped away forever. And he says, oh, no, God still has plans for you. And she goes, well, I don't believe in God. He says, I think you do. Because he's not talking about God. He's talking about him, right? Like, he's finally accepted what Farouk has been telling him, that you're not just a person. You are a God. And Farouk's been goading him, you know, the entire season. Leave the kiddie table. Come play with me. You know, like, come be exactly who you are. And so Dave is doing exactly what he wants him to do. I think what's being overlooked, because they want to make it seem like, oh, now it's all about Sid. You know, Sid's the hero, David's the bad guy. Farouk, he's the one still just, he's playing them all. He's got the strings going the entire time.
I agree. And so the Vermilion are saying, so they're all still trying to reason with David and saying, we can get you help. And the Vermilion say, you must have the treatment or be terminated. At that point, David's like, I am not going to go back into some sort of mental institution. What are you talking about? And this is just Dan Stevens, very fine acting. His face says it all when he does the, I'm a good person, I deserve love. It just breaks my heart.
I mean, even when he, you mentioned how he asked Sid at that point, that's when he asked her, you know, no, I want to hear you say it. Like, he wants to make sure that, like, even the person he thinks got his back 100%, you tell me they're going to kill me. And that's when she tells him, you drugged me, you had sex with me. And you can tell even at that point, and obviously this was a huge, you know, I think they put that in because this is the one thing that finally, like, turns the audience against David, you know, a lot of the audience, like, oh, he flat out date raped her, basically.
Yeah.
You know, and but the look on his face in the sense of he doesn't even understand that he did that, you know, like, right. He didn't do anything wrong. So he, and of course, I'm going to, you know, it's 2019, so I'll make sure I put the caveat of course, I in no way, you know, promote or encourage mentally, you know, psychically changing your mate's thoughts and then having sex with them. But he at least had good intentions, you know? So,
yeah.
I mean, he thought he was doing something for them, not just for him. And so, yeah, you see his heartbreak. You see him realizing, like, that I may be a bad guy. But then, like you said, it doesn't just – he breaks and then almost on the turn of a hat does the F this, I'm out of here. You know, like, you know, screw yeah. this. And then just his whole – he finally breaks the power and boom, he's out of there. So I love that too. It's like he can just turn on a dime. It's awesome.
He looks around the room, sees that nobody has his back and says, you know what? I'm done.
Yep.
Breaks out and then goes and frees Lenny and they take off. And yeah, then
there is no Blondie anymore.
Right. Yeah. What about Blondie? There is no Blondie anymore. Great line. And then Sid says to Clark, now what do we do? And Clark says, now we pray.
Yeah.
And so that's how it ends. And so that's where I feel like there's still more to what happened after to get to future Sid, right? If that future Sid was even real to begin with, to get to David destroying the world was clearly not in the battle for Farouk. It was post battle for Farouk. So we're going to see, I guess, David's descent into madness and chaos and destruction, and them trying, and the rest of the group trying to stop it and perhaps reverse it.
That, yeah,
that what you're thinking will happen?
Either that or him and Lenny just go full on old school him and Lenny, and they just have a, you know, now they realize they can use mental obliteration for everything and they have their drugged out insane fun times, but now they do it by, you know, raising cities and such. I don't know. Like, yeah, it leads to a lot of possibilities. Do you want to start getting into the previews of season 3 and kind of what sure. they've shown? So yeah. obviously they're showing in season 3, it looks again like it's going to be like a time jump, kind of like they did from season 1 to season 2, where we saw a year jump. This looks like obviously some time has changed because they're showing David is now a leader of some sort of cult. You know, like he's all dressed up in his kind of, you know, Indian inspired gear, his Wild Wild Country gear, and he's telling people he can help them and change their lives and stuff. So obviously he's gaining a following. And it looks to be crazier than ever.
Yes. I mean, in only 8 episodes, I hope they can wrap it up well and satisfactorily. I think they will.
Yeah, it looks to be obviously Division 3 versus David at this point.
Yeah.
Farouk has joined Division 3.
Yeah.
I still wonder how much Division 3 will turn out to be maybe a main bad, like the main bad guy as well. Cause you know, it's a Marvel property. So anytime a government agency is involved, they're never in it for the right reasons, right? Right. There's always something shady going on behind the scenes.
Right. Right.
Farouk obviously is holding stuff behind his back that he's not showing people. They're acting like he's just going to join the team to search out David, but he's got some kind of end game here or master plan involved. And David, I don't know. He seems to, at least the preview show, he seems to kind of maybe just be looking for a life for himself. And so I don't know if it's going to be one of these things where maybe, I don't know if his intent from the beginning of season 3 is going to be villainous or if he's gone to do something he thinks is right, and then Division 3 is going to continue to nudge him toward complete meltdown mode.
Yeah, and I, with Lenny in the mix influencing him, you know, she's not going to be pushing him to do the right things. So I think he is going to, I think we are going to see villainous David. And how bad can he get before he can't be redeemed any longer?
Right.
You know, he's already killed a lot of people. So.
And they've also.
Oliver dead is. Are we confirmed? Because there is that one scene where we think he's killed Oliver, but then Carrie shows up and says, I think he's going to be okay.
Yeah, I just assumed Oliver was tortured. I never thought he was dead. Because especially since they show the 3 years later,
right.
His mind is alive at some point, right? So, I mean, I just assumed he was beaten to hell or whatever. I'm curious, you know, they do kind of tip, or, you know, they show what they want to show. The trailer pretty much shows a almost Terminator 2 style looking Sid coming out of a doorway with a shotgun. And the way it cuts appears to show them killing David. And then the whole concept of the season is he gets this time traveler who I think the character's name is going to be Switch. And Switch is, you know, designed to either help him go back in time to stop himself from being killed or to warn himself. And I think even Farouk in the preview tells Sid, or maybe Sid asks him, how do you stop somebody who can go back in time and warn themselves? So it's going to be a complete time travel, you know, mind screw type of season, I think.
It's going to be great. I am so excited about it. And Dean, I'm so excited that you and I are going to share this journey. For anybody who is still listening, we have gone long. You know, I figured we would, and I'm cool with that. But we will make a point, as we do episode by episode recaps, we will make a point to keep those at like 30, 45 minutes. And we hope that if you're still listening, that you will continue to listen, and that you'll also, if you haven't watched Legion thus far, hopefully you haven't listened to all of this, but hopefully you'll get caught up and dive in, because season 3, the final season, does premiere on Monday, June 24th, which is just 9 short days from where we are now. That is a schedule change, being moved to a Monday. I think it's probably a good thing. I don't think FX has ever consistently had it on one night. Was it a Wednesday night show before?
I was about to say, if anything, I think it was maybe, yeah, it was either like a Thursday and then a Tuesday, or a Wednesday and then a Tuesday.
Yeah.
Something like that.
Yeah. And that can affect a show, show's longevity also, when the network continues to screw with it and move it around like that. But shows generally on a Monday night, I mean, Monday night is still, I mean, Sunday night's peak, but Monday night is still generally thought of as sort of peak, right?
Yeah, sure.
Pretty
it's
good
a 10 o'clock show, too. I think that, did it used to be at 9 even? They might have moved it back an hour, so I don't know. It's the last season. It's, honestly, it's there for the people that want it, you know, like, and that's why I think it's going to be so good. It's there for people who have buckled in and they're ready for this last leg of the race. Like, it's going to be a complete payoff, I think, for fans of the show.
I agree, and it's going to be a fun ride. I'm looking forward to discussing it with you, Dean. Any final words you want to say about the show before we wrap up here?
As my favorite character, Tonami, said to Lenny in season 2, episode 5, there is no present, only past and future.
Love it. Love it. What a great way to wrap up. So I want to say thank you, Dean. Tell everybody, do you want people to follow you on social media?
Sure. You can find me on Twitter at @Rockdale_Tiger, @Rockdale_Tiger. And if you hang out in the Radio Lab, Radio Shack page of the Radio Labyrinth, you've probably seen me posting in there as Dean Poole. So you'll find me around.
And do you listen to Von Hessler Doctrine as well?
Oh, of course, yeah. Podcasts. I don't listen live usually, but podcasts, and go check out Radio Labyrinth and Von Hessler and One Topic and all those. They're all great.
They are all great. I agree. Well, thank you again. And thank you, everybody, for listening. We will talk to you again next week, and we'll be back with Legion Season 3, Episode 1, which Woo! Will also be called Chapter 20. And we'll talk then. Thanks again, Dean.
You're welcome. Thank you.